Chairman Graham, I want to join in thanking you for organizing this delegation. It is really an honor to be back in Israel, a country that I feel a very deep personal connection with. It was very, very moving, as Senator Ernst was saying, for us to meet with families of the hostages, to hear the 500 days of hell that they have been through. None of us can imagine what that is like. And being here again, one feels the collective sense of trauma that the nation has been through and continues to be going through. And I just want to underscore what my colleagues have said, that you are not alone. The United States stands shoulder to shoulder with Israel. We have been so devastated not only by the magnitude of the horror that was inflicted on Israel 500 days ago, but also by the incredible wave of anti-Semitism it unleashed around the world, all too much of which we have experienced in the United States as well. A surge of anti-Semitism, which I know must contribute to a sense in Israel of being alone, but we want to underscore that you are not alone. You have a very powerful friend and ally standing with you, and that is the United States of America. Hamas can never be allowed to pose a military threat to Israel again. Hamas cannot be allowed to govern or pose any kind of authority in Gaza or anywhere else again. That is a non-starter. I do think it is important to think about where Israel wants this to end up. It is hard to know how to prosecute a war without knowing for sure where you want the end to be. And although I know this is an unpopular idea in Israel, I believe that ultimately the way to a lasting peace will require two states. What the attributes of a Palestinian state will be will have to be the subject of negotiation. But I hope that after Hamas is no longer a threat to Israel or anywhere else in the world, I hope that when security, not just a sense of security by Israelis, but the reality of security for Israel has been restored, that we can once again think about what the future can look like, that we can help achieve together. And once again, just a great honor and privilege to be here in Israel. Thank you.
Sir Kim.
Thank you, Senator Graham, and to my colleagues for letting me be a part of such an important trip where we were able to travel to the Munich Security Conference, come here and raise up the profile of these issues. For those that don't know me, I'm Senator Andy Kim, and I have to just say it was immensely powerful to be able to stand here alongside Israel commemorating 500 days since the attacks on October 7th, to grieve, to remember, and I think it was important to raise up, to remember the over 40 Americans that were brutally killed on that day, and then the hostages that we are seeking to have released. As the senator from New Jersey, my responsibility is certainly first and foremost as well with my own constituent, the Alexander family, Adon Alexander. That is a name that I raised in every single meeting that I had today. And the fact that we also had a chance to sit down with his mother and hear from the families of the hostages, what they really wanted to express is that hostages are not leverage. They should not be used in that type of means for such critical purposes right now as seeking peace and security. And the fact that they are is despicable. So we call for the immediate release of all remaining hostages, Adon and every single one of those left remaining. And what we really wanted to be able to press forward, and again, these were the words of the families of the hostages, they said, this is a moment right now. There is a moment right now in this diplomatic window to be able to push forward for the release of all. And as we had these meetings as well with so many different leaders, it's also clear that there is a window right now to try to push forward on a regional solution, one that hopefully can build towards an enduring security. And we're not being naive. We certainly see things as they are, and the challenges that are there. and protecting Israel's right to defend itself, to be able to ensure that Hamas doesn't pose a threat and they are not in political or military control in Gaza or elsewhere. But we have to make sure that we're pushing for that longer enduring security, to be able to seek the kind of stability that we want with Israel, with the Palestinian people, and for all in the region. Thank you again for letting me be a part of this.
Take a couple of quick questions.
Yeah,
he was first.
Thank you, Senator. My question is regarding, hold on, I just wrote it. Yes, so where things stand in terms of normalization efforts between Saudi Arabia and Israel, and are they still demanding Israeli commitment for a Palestinian state? And another question, how effective do you think the sanctions that President Trump has imposed on the ICC in terms of dropping the arrest warrants against Netanyahu and Gallant? I'm Balik Sladin from I-24 News.
I'll take a shot at it. Jump in. So the Prime Minister said the biggest threat to the state of Israel is a nuclear-armed Iran, because they will kill all the Jews with a nuke if they get it. I believe that. So they can't get one, and they could use it if they had more than one against Arabs, against us. So second to that was the ICC. I mean, look at all the threats the nation of Israel faces. He believed that the International Criminal Court claiming jurisdiction over the state of Israel, a non-member, to be prosecuted in The Hague is an existential threat to Israel, and I agree with that. The hope is that our Democrat and Republican colleagues can take another shot at legislation to sanction the ICC. I think there's a breakthrough to be had where we could get 80 votes, and we're going to go back to the drawing board. The second thing that's important is any state that tries to implement the arrest warrant, any nation state, I believe should be sanctioned heavily by the United States. Why? To deter. We're next. The theory of the case is that a non-member, Israel, a very robust democracy, by the way, the Rome Statute wasn't written to deal with Israel, the United States. It was written to deal with ungoverned areas, lawless places in the world. So the theory they're espousing is that they have jurisdiction over every country anywhere in the world, and if they receive a complaint they think is legitimate, they can come after a democratically elected government with a robust rule of law that's not a member. What prevents the ICC from coming after the President of the United States, the Secretary of Defense, a member of the Senate? Nothing. So my goal is to crush the concept that the ICC has unlimited jurisdiction to go anywhere they want to go and prosecute anybody they want to prosecute. Israel cannot survive with its political leadership unable to travel, its soldiers threatened to go to jail for defending the state of Israel, and we're next. So where are we with normalization? October 7th was designed to stop normalization. Senator Ernst met with MBS on October the 6th, and he was very enthusiastic about the impending breakthrough. I've come here more times than I can count. I practically moved to Saudi Arabia. The deal was there. It was a matter of days, not months or weeks, in October of 2023 that we were going to announce the biggest deal in 1,000 years, a treaty for Saudi Arabia, passed by the United States Senate, recognition of Israel with an end game for the Palestinians that Israel could live with and the Arabs would accept. October the 7th was designed to stop that. Iran's worst nightmare above all others is for the Arabs and the Israelis to reconcile and solve the Palestinian problem in perpetuity. That scares the hell out of them. And October 7th was designed to stop that. Let me tell you where I think we're at. We're ways away. The attack on Israel, the second largest attack on the Jewish people in the history of the Jewish people since the Holocaust, has been traumatic. The desire to reconcile or live with the Palestinians in any way, shape, or form is a pretty hard sell right now in the Arab world. Israel's won the war on the ground, but they've lost it on television. You go anywhere in the Arab world, and all they see is morning, noon, and night attacks on the Palestinian people. My promise to the people of Israel and to this region is not to give up. I am very optimistic we will break through, and let me tell you why. There's no other solution. You can destroy Hamas, and we will, but they will come back unless Palestinians have something to live for and Israel has security to make sure there's no other October 7th. As to Iran, you will never know peace in this region as long as the Ayatollah and his henchmen have the capability to terrorize the region. So the number one goal for me, above all else, is to neutralize the Iranian nuclear program, to take that threat off the table so we can talk to each other in this region and solve problems for the benefit of the world. As to normalization, I think it's just a matter of time, because what the Arabs want and what Israel wants and what the world wants is to come together in an economic partnership to move forward toward the light away from the darkness.
Let me, I think part of your question was sanctions. Let me just say about sanctions, maximum pressure works. The Prime Minister emphasized to us how important strengthening and enforcing the sanctions are to deterring and weakening Iran. The United States can send a message to Iran. The President said that if there wasn't a release of hostages, there would be hell to pay. Now, Iran ought to be the one to pay hell, because ultimately they are responsible for what Hamas does, as well as Hezbollah and the Houthis. They are the head of the snake. And the common recognition of that fact is an encouraging part of what I see happening, because the Arab plan to be submitted to the President will reflect that common understanding. But maximum pressure through sanctions, which Senator Ernst and I have worked on, I'm hoping we can move forward on, and I hope the administration will do it as well, because the President's the one who said there would be hell to pay.
Not wanting to irreparably disrupt the ongoing peace framework with Israel's neighbors. And there's some concerns in Israel about the array of Egyptian troops and tanks in Sinai, you know, in that same vein of disrupting the peace with the neighbors. So if you could just talk a little bit about what your concerns are and what you think the U.S. can do to help maintain the peace and deconflict, as you said.
My concerns are exactly the ones that Senator Graham just express. In order to keep the peace framework on track, the Arab partners in that peace process are going to need an understanding that works for them and that they can bring home to their populations with pride. And at the same time, Israel needs to make absolutely certain that Hamas never has the power to inflict casualties in Israel again. And as a part of that, the best way to do that is to make sure they have no power in Gaza or anywhere else again. What that leaves open is the question of, once Hamas is gone, what is the governance for the remaining Palestinians in Gaza? And it's that question that could disrupt the comfort of the Arab partners as they conclude the deal. There's still deal space there, I believe, and I think it will land, because I'm an optimist, but that's the issue that I was speaking to.
Yes. Yeah, we'll get you a couple more.
It's Jody Cohen from Newsmax. Senator Graham, you talked about, in order, the need to deal with Iran, destroy Hamas, and then focus on Gaza. With all the attention being on President Trump's day after plan for Gaza, do you feel that the world's eyes somewhat have strayed away from Iran?
The one thing, that's a really good question. She can't say hello without mentioning Iran. The overarching theme of all our meetings, Iran. Iran with a nuke is a nightmare for the Jewish state. It's a nightmare for the world because Arabs will want a nuclear weapon of their own and you'll have a nuclear arms race. Everything's important. But if you ask me, people ask me, what keeps you up at night? Traveling a lot. Time changes. But Iran with a nuke, because they'll use it. You know, I think Rocket Man's kind of a thug. You got China, you got Russia. This man and his regime are hell-bent on three things: purifying Islam in their own image, the Sunni Arabs, destroying the Jewish state, and driving every Westerner out of the Mideast. So every decision I make as a senator in this region is to make sure their nuclear ambitions are never met. Now we're at a crossroads. Time is not on our side. They're accelerating, in my view, their desire to acquire nuclear capability because their proxies have been very seriously hurt. What to do and when to do it. If you want to negotiate, you better put Iran on a clock or it will never end. If you want to negotiate, you need to have an outcome that will secure the goal of making sure they never have a nuke. That's the Libyan model. I think the chance of successfully negotiating Iran out of their nuclear ambitions is about like me being in the NBA. It's possible, but I don't think it's going to happen. So I am urging the Trump administration, if you try negotiations, put them on the clock and make sure you tell them up front what an acceptable outcome would look like. If that doesn't work, if you want to do that, then you need to quickly pivot and give Israel the capability they're lacking, which is not much, to deliver a decisive blow to the Iran nuclear program. One Holocaust is enough. If you told me 80 years after the end of World War II, there would be a power on the planet after the extermination, the effort to exterminate every Jew in the world, that openly avows the destruction of the Jewish people, that the world would wonder what to do. The answer is simple. Stop them. Stop them now.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Lisa Rozovsky from Haaretz, and I think my both questions are to you, Senator Graham. First of all, you were already asked about it, but still, it seems like a lot is happening now in Riyadh, both in connection to the Ukrainian-Russian war and here. From what you hear from the Trump administration and from your meetings with Netanyahu, what would be Saudi Arabia's role in the day after in Gaza? And is it somehow maybe interconnected with what's going on in Ukraine? And second, about the ICC. Before sanctioning Netanyahu and Gallant, ICC sanctioned Putin, and then I don't think I heard any protests against it from your side. Aren't you afraid that this bill you're trying to pass and President Trump's executive order will ultimately disrupt, ruin the international law, the international order?
Okay.
Thank you.
Russia and Israel are not the same. Bibi and Putin are not the same. Bibi actually has to get elected. Nobody's falling out of windows over here that I've seen. The idea that there's a comparison between Putin's Russia and Israel is offensive to me at every level. The prime minister goes to court 3 days a week. You have a very robust legal system over here. And if you don't like the government today, just wait. There'll be an election in 2 weeks. Does anybody really believe that Putin's held accountable by anybody in Russia? That's why you have the Rome Statute, not the United States, not Israel. So that idea, to me, is an offensive concept that there's any comparison at all. What role will Saudi Arabia play? The key role, the definitive role. Now, how does this war end? It ends with the destruction of Hamas. It ends with people being able to leave Gaza if they want to, but the ones who choose to stay, what's next? And Iran's on the top. Got to get that done. Nothing works. The Arabs, through Saudi Arabia, have told me that they would recognize Israel. Saudi Arabia would. If they get two things. A defense agreement with the United States, which requires 67 votes, is kind of a checkmate to Iranian ambitions, and would be the ultimate brand change for Saudi Arabia. It'd be pretty easy to sell a business interest on coming to Saudi Arabia if you could tell that business concern, America will go to war for Saudi Arabia. That's a big brand change. So he wants that. Two, he and every other Arab leader has to deliver a dignified solution to the Palestinian issue, or they will not last. I understand the politics in Israel. You're unified in the idea you don't want to reward the Palestinians with a state after they slaughtered 1,200 of your countrymen and women. I get that, and nor should you. But the question becomes, how does this end, and how do you keep Hamas from coming back? Here's the good news. MBS wants Hamas to come back about as much as you do. His 2030 vision is inconsistent with Hamas and the Ayatollah having a nuclear weapon. We have an alignment of interest for the first time since I've been coming here, where Arab leaderships in the UAE and Saudi Arabia have the same view of radical Islam as Israel does. We want no part of it. We reject them. Women are working in Saudi Arabia. They're driving in Saudi Arabia. Then go to dinner by themselves, things that seem small or large. They're going to spend $1 trillion in Saudi Arabia modernizing their economy, becoming the leader of the world for AI. Hamas prevents that from happening. So to everybody in Israel, you could have no better partner in destroying radical Islam than Saudi Arabia. Last question.
Hi, Alexander Cuomo from Reuters. Question to Senator Graham, just picking up on this point about the day after, what exactly is the role of the Gulf states with regards to reconstruction, security, and governance? And just secondly, to Senator Blumenthal, if I may just sneak it in, what attributes about this plan that King Abdullah has explained to you has convinced you that this is realistic and that this could work and be a viable alternative to what the president has made public?
They're meeting in Saudi Arabia next week to come up with a plan that would allow the Palestinians to leave if they would like, but if they stay in place, to reconstruct without a mass exodus, and they're going to present it, I think, to the world, but particularly President Trump. The one thing that President Trump has done, he started a discussion that was long overdue. I think the Arabs have woken up, hey, we need to find a better alternative than what's been said. So I'm quite optimistic the Arab world will come up with a plan and present to President Trump that shows how you can provide security to Israel and deal with the Palestinian issue without driving them all out. Think of World War II. Germany and Japan were the most radical populations on the planet. There's no more radicalized group of people on the planet than people who live in Gaza, and to a lesser extent, West Bank. They've been taught from the time they're born to the time they die, kill all the Jews. How do you fix that? What did we do in Germany and Japan? We changed the education system. We empowered new people. We took the old and replaced it with the new. The one thing I can promise you, I don't speak Arabic. I am not the guy to do this. And quite frankly, our friends in Israel are not the people to do this. Who will change the education system in Gaza? The Arabs. And they're doing it in their own country. Who will give economic hope to the Palestinians? It will be the Arabs, because we're not spending a dime. We didn't start this war. So my belief is that de-radicalization and demilitarization can only be accomplished through Arab involvement. The role of Israel. You should have the ability to go into any place you need to go to stop a terrorist attack. We did not leave Germany and Japan. We had a military presence there, and we're still there in a different role. I think it would be foolish to expect Israel to just leave the day after Hamas is destroyed. You have legitimate security concerns that will require some form of military presence. But let me tell you what would be equally implausible is to occupy Gaza permanently. You can't do that. That will result in Israeli soldiers being killed every week. So in the short term, and I mean years, not months, Israel needs to have the security presence required to prevent another October 7th, and you devolve power back to the new population you create based on conditions. This worked in Germany and Japan. It will work here. But it won't be Americans doing this. It will be the Arab world.
Let me. I think you wanted me to elaborate as well. My conversations with Arab leaders, most recently King Abdullah, have convinced me they have a really realistic appraisal of what their role should be in their own national interests, which is security in Gaza, which they have the military resources to do, reconstruction in Gaza, which they have the money to do, education in Gaza, which they have the cultural architecture to do, and an appreciation for the support of the United States through a possible defense treaty against the common enemy, which is Iran. And to the people of the United States, I would remind you that the Hezbollah flag says death to Israel, death to the United States. That's the common mantra among the Iran proxies, death to the United States as well as to Israel. We have a mutual security interest here because the absence of a secure and lasting peace for this region will mean that it's a continuing source of terrorism threatening the United States. And the Houthi closure of the Red Sea is a perfect example. It is increasing the costs of goods and services in the United States of America because of the increased insurance costs. We are linked by unshakable bonds of faith, culture, economy, and emotion to Israel. But in a very real, hard-headed, practical sense, and we emphasize this point to the Prime Minister, our future and our fates are inextricably linked by a common national security interest.
Thank you.
Newly selected president in Lebanon, as well as King Abdullah in Jordan before coming here. And I think we are at the cusp of a potentially enormous opportunity. Israel, to its great credit, has broken Iran's axis. Iran is recognized throughout the region as the common scourge and enemy. And the progress made in Lebanon and in Gaza presents that kind of opportunity for a real prospect of peace and potential progress for the region as a whole. But Lebanon needs support. The Lebanese armed forces should be supported by the United States much more than they have been because they are the institution that can preserve the victories that have been accomplished against Hezbollah, which are so important to Israel, as the Prime Minister emphasized to us today. And he strongly supports the United States being more forcefully supportive of the Lebanese armed forces. And I'll be very blunt. My view is that the Trump plan is a non-plan. It's a hot mess. The possibility of takeover by the United States is a non-starter, I think, for most of us. A takeover involving any troops, any taxpayer dollars, is simply a non-starter. But the encouraging point here is that the Arab states will be presenting a plan to the president. My talks with King Abdullah convinced me that the plan that the Arab states will offer to President Trump provides a realistic prospect for normalizing relations, self-determination by the Palestinians, regional defense arrangements, and security for Israel. If those components are part of a realistic plan, it could be a game changer for the region. And finally, let me just say, as always, for me, and I think for many in our delegation, the most powerfully moving part of our trip was our conversation with the hostages. Obviously, the accomplishments of the IDF and the Israeli intelligence community are simply awesome, particularly the destruction using cell phones and pagers in Lebanon, the progress made against Hezbollah and against Hamas should impress anyone with military or intelligence knowledge. But the hostage families, in their courage and strength, their determination and perseverance are beyond words in the way that they affected me when I first came here a couple of weeks after October 6th. I think it was the high point, our meeting with them at that moment, and again today. So the urgency of returning the hostages continually is on my mind and my heart. And I think they will be with me when I go back to the United States.
Sir, thank White you.
House. A little bit of housekeeping first. In less than 24 hours, our delegation has had meetings with the defense minister, the foreign minister, the speaker of the Knesset, and the prime minister and his team. So first of all, our thanks to the Israeli government for making such a significant element of Israeli leadership available to us in a short time period. Second, this is actually a pretty cool delegation, as Senate delegations go anyway. Lindsey Graham has been working intensely hard to try to solve problems here in the Mideast, and I am very proud to be associated with him. Dick Blumenthal has been working with him very carefully, showing both bipartisanship and extraordinary diligence. They've both been here over and over and over again. Dick started coming to Israel when he was 11 years old. Joni Ernst has been the conscience of the Senate with respect to hostages and is extremely knowledgeable over here all the time. Her colleague Dan Sullivan couldn't be with us this evening because he has another speaking engagement, but he is also a very frequent traveler to this area, very strong on regional issues. Adam Schiff spent very important years as the head of the House Intelligence Committee and is deeply versed in the issues in this part of the world. And Andy Kim, as a former Foreign Service officer, really knows how diplomacy is done. So it's been a great honor for me to be with everyone, and that's kind of the background for the delegation. The one point that I will make is that one of the purposes we have had in coming here has been to, on the one hand, make sure that Israel is able to zero out its continuing risk of Hamas attack out of Gaza, but in doing so, not irreparably disrupt the really important ongoing peace framework that has been developed among Israel's neighbors. Deconflicting those two imperatives is going to be the key to the region's success, and we've been here trying to encourage that. And with that, let me turn it over to Senator Ernst.
Number one, you'll be invited back. That was good.
Thank you. And to, I will also share my thanks for the Israeli government for making these meetings happen today. But first and foremost, I want to say thank you to the hostage families that joined us this afternoon and again shared their concerns, their feelings of loss and sacrifice for those that are still being held, those that are now deceased, is quite palpable. We feel it. To our very core. The urgency they asked us to communicate, it is necessary that we bring our hostages home today, so as soon as possible. So the past several years, I've traveled extensively here in the Middle East, and since October 7th, I have been in the country now five times, working on hostage issues, other issues when it comes to the peace treaty and strengthening our Abraham Accords. What I have heard from many leaders, not just here in Israel, but with Arab nations, is a question they will ask me, where is American leadership? Well, make no doubt about it, folks, that in the last several weeks we have seen American leadership. It is present once again. So first again, hostages must come home now. Now. And this threat is not just against Hamas, but is their backers, Iran. There is a common thread through the Middle East. Those that see Iran as an enemy, which would be not only Israel, but also our Arab partners and allies. Iran, listen very clearly. We will put maximum pressure on you, and we will work with our Israeli partners to make sure you do not succeed economically, militarily, politically in this region. So we will continue to be the absolute partner to Israel and our friends and partners here in the region. Absolute. There is no daylight between Israel and the United States of America. Bring our hostages home now. And Iran, Hamas, we are coming for you.
Senator Schiff.